And now for a Queer Music Heritage exclusive.
Can I turn to? You give me something I can hold on to. I know you think I'm like the others before. We saw your name and number on the wall. Jimmy, I got you. Jimmy, you're the boy for me. You don't know me, but you make me so happy. I tried to call you before, but I lost my nerve. I tried my imagination, but I was disturbed. Jimmy, I got you. Number off the wall. I got it.
Got it. Got it.
For a good time. For a good time. Call.
Yeah, is Jimmy there? I've never done this before.
Welcome to Queer Voices on KPFT, and this segment is called Queer Music Heritage. I'm J.D. Doyle, and I'm here on the fourth Monday of each month to bring you an hour devoted to our culture's music. I'm very pleased to have been able to open the show with a brand new song by Mark Weigel from his next album, which won't be released until late spring. The album will be called Different and the Same, and the song Jimmy is a cover version. It was originally called 867-5309-JENNY and was a hit for Tommy Two Tone in 1982, but I like Mark's version much better. The first feature on tonight's show will be a little different, because instead of being about a particular artist, it's about a record label, a very mysterious record label. And it's a subject I've been meaning to cover ever since I started Queer Music Heritage over 3 years ago. The label was called Camp Records, and it is indeed mysterious because almost nothing is known about it. It was active in the early to mid-60s and was kind of an underground label. It was based in Los Angeles, but the only address given was a P.O. box in Hollywood. They released two albums and 1045s, and the artists singing most of the songs were uncredited, or with names obviously made up, like Bird E. Bath or B. Bubba. The first album was called The Queen Is in the Closet, and it was full of campy parodies, done with very stereotypical singing voices. Here's a song from it called The Weekend of a Hairdresser.
The steamboat is leaving mighty soon. It's going for a weekend, there's gonna be a full moon. Be sure to pack your perfume, your new bikini suit.
The time of year is ripe, my dear, I hear it's loaded with fruit.
Get on board from Fire Island, get on board right away. Get on board from Fire Island.
I know it's gonna be gay.
When you get to that island, unpack your pretty things. They aren't very formal, don't wear your wedding rings. The cocktail hour is something, it really is the most.
You'll meet our dear old auntie, he's gonna be our host.
Get on board from Fire Island, make the trip right away. No one's called John or Harry.
They're known as Franny and Ray.
Tell Spring, you'll spring a later. And your ponytail, well, there's gonna be a big drag ball where you can really wail. Just sashay up the gangplank and join our little crew. And rush right to a porthole, you can watch the seagulls swoop.
Are very festive, you'll romp and have a ball. The sounds you hear at night are nothing more than a mating call. When you get back to town, my dear, you'll have a brand new friend.
But if you don't make out this time, well then come back next weekend.
May I have this dance?
Yeah, baby, but you gotta leave.
Waltz faster, honey, they're playing a cha-cha.
Crazy. The time has come for leaving. The hour to depart. You may have pleasant memories or just a broken heart. Next weekend may be better.
Oh, yeah!
So come and take a chance.
Sing the song, sing the song!
And hop right on that ferry. It'll take you to romance.
Hurry down to the landing. See you back at the pier. Leave your kids at the office. Pack up all your gear. Hurry down to the landing. See you back on the pier. We can all let our hair down. We'll see you Friday day.
All aboard, all aboard.
Hey, watch your heels, May. You're stepping on my train.
What did you do to your hair? It looks like a wig.
It is a wig.
You'd never know it, sweetie. Do you like my tiara? It's just like that princess, what's your name?
Grace, Grace.
Yes, Princess Grace.
That ain't no princess, honey. That's a queen.
Camp Records also released 10 singles on 45 RPM Records, and many had picture covers, again with stereotypical poses. The 45s are all very rare, and I've only got 8 of the 10. The first one was a parody of a popular TV commercial of the early 60s for Benson & Hedges cigarettes. The tagline of the commercial was, "I'd rather fight than switch," and if I'm remembering correctly, they often featured smokers with black eyes, proving that they would indeed fight before switching brands. But the Camp Records 45 took a twist on that, making it, "I'd rather fight than swish." And the 45 gave two versions of it. Here's about a minute of, "I'd rather fight than swish."
I gotta get me a leather jacket. I gotta get me a chain. I gotta get me a motorcycle. Man, I feel no pain. I'd rather fight than swish.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'd rather fight than swish.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
If there's someone nelly, I hit him in the belly. But when I see a queen,
you get the idea. On the flip side, the 45 was the same song with different lyrics called "I'd Rather Swish Than Fight." I prefer this version.
Oh yes, that's a darling shade of lavender. No, I don't want them to look really like capris. Just, well, make them a little tighter, that's it. Slit them up a little bit, maybe to the knees.
Gotta get me some real tight britches. Gotta get me a date.
Gonna be like those real wild bitches, and I can hardly wait. I'd rather swish than fight. I'd rather swish than fight. When I see a feller, I get kinda mellow. And if I see a guy, well, I just give him the eye. Cause I am gay.
Watch it, buddy.
Hooray! Gonna get me a real fine drag for the holiday ball. Got the prize right in the bag. Heels so high, I hope I don't fall. I'd rather swish than fight. I'd rather swish than fight. When I'm out a cruising, well, I just get to musing. If I see a stunner, I'm just gonna wanna. And why not? I mean, after all, I am gay.
Watch it, fella.
Shut up. Hooray. Once I met me the perfect mate, or so at least I thought. But disaster was my fate after what I caught. Oh my dear, I was at that doctor forever and ever and ever. But that's the gamble that we take for our little worlds. Still we go on a risky fate, cause we're all just girls. But I know I'm gonna try again till I find me the one. I'm just like that any girl who had to get her gun. I'd rather swish than fight. I'd rather swish than fight. If you see me on the street, well, get lost, cause it's my beat. But if you should need a friend, I'll be yours until the end. You know it, sweetheart, cause I am gay.
Watch it, mister.
Oh, will you shut up? Hooray!
If you know a single guy, why don't you just send him by?
I'll be very kind to him. I'll satisfy his every whim.
You bet you.
Oh, watch yourself now. Cause I am gay. Whoopee, baby, and hooray.
Okay, buddy, what the hell are you staring at?
Well, you silly goose. Don't you know that open-toe shoes are passé with leather jackets?
Homer, the happy little homosexual.
Sexual.
You'll find that though he may be intellectual, tap your little feet out, sweetheart. He's well adjusted, I suppose. He doesn't care if the whole world knows. He goes cruising every night, wearing pants that are too damn tight.
Because he's Homer,
a happy little homosexual.
Sexual.
And though he may be very ineffectual, he finds a fella every week to take him dancing cheek to cheek. Homer, the happy little fag, he is.
Gee whiz, Homer, he's a happy kid. Homer,
a happy little sexual deviant. Keep going, honey, I hear every little sound you're making. We'll get you backed into a corner, and I bet that you won't shiver, you won't faint, cause you either are or ain't a member of his clannish club.
Make your mind up quickly, bud. Homer,
the guy that we all call the fairy's friend.
Fairy's friend.
beside you and yours unto the end.
Never end. You better hurry, you better hasten.
We're getting bigger than those masons. Homer is every little thing we say.
Following I'd Rather Swish Than Fight was Homer the Happy Little Homo, and an interesting thing about that 45 is the credits. The song, according to the label, was done by Bird E. Bath and the Gentlemen, with tap dancing solo by Rodney Dangerfield. This is the only real person's name on any of the Camp Records releases. This would have been very early in Rodney Dangerfield's career. I'm guessing this 45 was released around 1963. The second album on the Camp label was entirely different. It was called Mad About the Boy, and was filled with mostly well-known Broadway and cabaret songs that were originally sung by women. The album kept the pronouns intact, making them very gay. I think this was the first time this approach was deliberately used on record. The songs were done in lounge style, without a campy approach, in other words, done straight. The liner notes state, the primary reason for doing this album was to prove that good songs could and should be sung by everyone. Gender should not be the determining factor as to who should sing what. The notes later say that the male soloist and the other artists in the album are, and this is in quotes, well-known Hollywood, TV, and screen personalities, but we are not at liberty to reveal true names. I have no idea at all if this is true or simply hype. The album probably came out in 1964 or 1965. So, from the album Mad About the Boy, here's a medley I've put together giving you a taste of three of the songs. Mad About the Boy, Make the Man Love Me, and One Boy.
Mad About the Boy. I know it's stupid to be mad about the boy. I'm so ashamed of it, but must admit the sleepless nights I've had about the boy. On the silver screen, he melts my foolish heart in every single scene. Although I'm quite aware that here and there are traces of a cat about the boy. Lord knows I'm not a fool girl, I really shouldn't care. Lord knows I'm not a schoolgirl in a flurry of her first affair. Make the man love me now. By and by, I'll make the man happy. I know how. He must see how badly I want him. Want him just as he is. May I say that should the man ask me, I'll be his. One more, one boy, one more. One more, one boy, one more. One boy, one special boy, one boy to go with, to talk with and walk with. One boy, that's the way it should be.
That's the way it should be. One boy.
One boy, one certain boy, one boy to laugh with, to joke with, have coke with. One boy, not two.
Life
is.
see. I need him and he needs me. One love, one steady love, one guy to hold me forever and ever. One guy, that's the way it should be. That's the way it should be. That's the way it should be. That's the way it should be.
Yes, I think so too. I've set up a special section on my website as a tribute to the Camp Records label, where I give more tidbits and observations about it and scans of those campy record covers. And I've set it up so you can hear almost every song on the label, from the two albums and the 45s. So now, Camp Records, the unknown gay record label of the 60s, has a home on the internet. It's a unique look at gay humor of that time. And this is a good time to remind you to be sure to listen to After Hours with Jimmy Carper every Sunday morning from 1 to 4 a.m. on KPFT. It's queer radio with attitude. Also, I invite you to check out my website at www.queermusicheritage.com, where you can view the playlist and see photos of the artists and recordings, and listen to the show anytime. On tonight's show, I get to bring you a very special interview with one of our musical and comedy pioneers, Lynn Lavner. She's been billed as America's most politically incorrect entertainer, and she's been bringing her special brand of humor and cabaret music to us since 1981. Her first album from that year was a musical that played off-Broadway called Ladies Don't Spit and Holler, and it featured her writing and three other singers beside herself. She released three solo albums in the 80s called Something Different, I'd Rather Be Cute, and You Are What You Wear. And 1992 brought us her first live album, Butch Fatale, which really gives a good taste of both her music and her very funny and often thought-provoking monologues. She's been given the Christopher Street West Award for Extraordinary Creativity in Lesbian and Gay Music and Entertainment. And she's well known as a very versatile MC for events ranging from the National Women's Music Festival, International Conferences of MCC, Dignity, and Gay Lesbian Jews, and the International Mr. Leather and Mr. Drummer contests. That's quite a variety. She was out there doing both out music and comedy at a time when really no other women were doing it, and I think she helped make it easier for the lesbian comics who followed. Before we get to the interview, I want to introduce you to her music by playing a song from her latest album, Butch Fatale, called A Lesbian Too Long.
Why is there a hint of Sturm und Drang in all I do? My joie de vivre has turned into ennui. I've said sayonara to the chutzpah I once knew. Why isn't English good enough for me? Maybe it's my angst that's finally showing. But like that silly rabbit, I'm still going. I've got clothing in my closet that Rommel wouldn't wear. I think I've been a lesbian too long. Some festivals won't book me. Hold your breath until I care. I think I've been a lesbian too long. I never met a queen I couldn't dish with. I never met a folk song I could stand. The other day I realized I can say Irva Shivad. I think I've been a lesbian too long. There's absolutely nothing with batteries on my shelf. I think I've been a lesbian too long. I may not be Madonna, but I vibrate for myself. I think I've been a lesbian too long. There's more to life than trashing all your sisters. Perhaps one should employ this rule of thumb. Anything worth doing gets Patricia Ireland arrested. Strange. I think I've been a lesbian too long.
I was looking at your albums, and I decided that one of my favorite songs was Lesbian Too Long. So I'd like to, like to start off by asking, have you been a lesbian too long?
Somebody asked me if I was always a lesbian, and I said not yet. But I expect that probably, you know, I was ever the slow child, and so I didn't come out to myself until I was 3 years old. But that's the truth. I knew very, very early. They gave me a dollhouse, and I did the electrics. But I suppose that everybody gets to a certain age where they just have seen everything that can be cute with fashion and cocktails, and they feel, well, I think I've been a lesbian too long.
I think I've been a lesbian, a well-adjusted lesbian, a happy, healthy lesbian, left-handed leather lesbian. I'm amazed that I'm a lesbian this long. Am I out yet?
Tell me about your early career. How did you get started as an entertainer?
Well, I really inherited, I guess, a knack for playing the piano and being a wise guy from my father, who was a lawyer by profession, but he was a cantor on the high holy days, and he played the piano and he sang. So he bought a piano. It was the only major purchase of his entire life, and that's why we had one in the house when he died when I was 8 years old, and I began to play it. And that was just my entertainment for years and years. In high school, I was the kid who hid behind the piano while everybody else sang, and began to play piano bar when I was, I guess, in my 20s. And as anybody who ever worked in a bar will tell you, nothing good happens after 2 o'clock. So at 2 in the morning, I began to fool around with writing my own kind of satires and takeoffs and a few original songs. And so I used to just keep my eyes and ears open and watch what was happening around me and write songs about it. And, of course, eventually wound up putting it together in a cabaret act, and I played the duplex in New York City in the Village, which was my first paying job.
That's a good start.
Oh, I found out later that people left their homes, apartments, and lovers and gave themselves 2 years in New York to try to play the duplex. And I sort of got on the subway because I lived in Brooklyn, and I was teaching school at the time, and I would teach during the day, and I would come in and do cabaret, or I would do piano bar at night. But I held both those jobs together for some time until I began to travel with the cabaret act.
When was that, roughly?
Well, it certainly was roughly, I can tell you that. That was in the years of community housing and People Express Airlines, but I think that the first time that I went to San Francisco was at the very tail end of 1984, and was taken under the wing of Sharon McKnight, who is a wonderful, wonderful cabaret singer, and we had been friendly in New York in the clubs, and she said, Lynn, when you play out here, come stay with me. So I did, and played a few gigs, and Sharon was very generous and would have me get up for 10 minutes in the middle of her act, wherever she was playing. And I got more work that way, and I really date the full-time travel from playing Chicago in the spring of 1985, and was really on the road for about 13 years.
Were you doing music and comedy the whole time, or did you start out with one or the other?
It began really, you know, it was a cabaret act from the start. I played my own songs, but I always had something of a political consciousness, and I realized that there were many people who liked hearing that. They liked hearing lesbian and gay words said in a prideful way, and they liked sharing experience. And there's so much that's funny or inspiring or terrifying about growing up gay, and that has not changed over time. So I began to talk between songs, and that was really the form that the act took. But there was also emceeing, and then I began to record. So it really kept me pretty busy.
I've read that a couple of reviews where they commented that an amazing ability of yours is that you can appeal just about equally to gay men and to lesbians. And how do you attribute that?
I think probably to the fact that I started and got my whole gay sensibility and camp sense of humor from a gay male audience in those piano bars in Greenwich Village. Many more guys were out, and they had the money to come in and have a nice dinner, and they were the ones who loved the same music that I grew up loving, Broadway show songs and Gershwin, Porter, Kern, and Berlin. And so my act, I think, very naturally played to them. And in fact, those were my first out-of-town gigs. The lesbian audience really didn't come until later. And people, you know, who booked me would say, do you think that women will enjoy this as well? I think that was probably in the years when a lesbian act was probably a woman with a guitar singing about her dead pony. And that was just never my thing. That wasn't my, I didn't care for that kind of music. I am not a folky, and I, so, the men's leather events, well, now that's a whole nother story. That was something that came from, I guess, from some of the humorous early songs and from my being booked into, I actually played the 10th anniversary of Gay Men's SM Association in New York, and I think I'm still the only woman to have emceed both International Mr. Leather and the Mr. Drummer contest.
When did you start wearing leather in your act?
Very early on, as it was really a political statement more than anything else, you know, in the gay world, and remember, this is, I guess we're talking now about the early and mid-80s. There's always been an evolution politically of what's correct and what's permissible, and I thought, well, who are the two groups who are most despised in our community by outsiders and by some in our community, and they are, of course, drag queens and leather people. And, you know, I mean, I'd grown up trying to avoid wearing what drag queens wore, so that was eliminated immediately. So I went into our Christopher Street leather shop and had things, some things made for me in my size. It's not easy to get handcuffs in a girl size 12. I'm 5 feet tall. I weigh 98 pounds. And so the visual of my tramping out on stage, no pun intended, in full heavy black leather, you know, I think made a statement.
Well, you also do the tux outfit, too.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, that was my fantasy. I grew up wanting to be Humphrey Bogart and Clark Gable and Cary Grant and, you know, winning the beautiful woman in those black and white 1940s movies. I watched Million Dollar Movie and loved that stuff. And so when I finally worked in a field where I could wear a tuxedo and a bow tie to work, well, I wasn't going to let that chance pass me by.
That kind of fits in with one of the songs I want to play. Could you please tell us about the song, Something Different?
Something Different was the story of the little girl who knows immediately that she is not like the other little girls. And I think the first line is, all the other little girls loved Fred. I fell in love with Ginger. What can I say? It's something different. And it goes through the many ways that that I identified as what I guess now would be called a soft butch, which did not appear in your Funk and Wagnalls then. But, you know, the idea of wanting to slick back your hair and wanting to play ball and not dress up and play with dolls. So that's kind of the song that a lot of people relate to.
All the other little girls like Fred. I fell in love with Ginger. What can I say? It's something different. All the other girls would braid their head. I combed my hair with frilly. Greasy, all right, but something different. They grew up sipping port. I grew up to be Bobby Short. All the other girls had Mary Janes. I wore a black tuxedo, harder to clean, but something different. All the other girls played hide and seek. I played third base and shortstop, bloody as hell, but something different. All the other little girls had dolls. I had electric football, shocking to tell, but something different. I never gave a damn, that's the kind of a girl I am. And if you'd like to know me better, ma'am, don't let the lipstick fool you. Here in my heart is something different.
That was a little bit of Something Different, the title track from Lynn Lavner's 1983 album. Who were your musical and comedy influences?
All probably immigrant Jews from New York. In the field of comedy, it would be Woody Allen and Sid Caesar and Howie Morris, Carl Reiner, and that gang, Mel Brooks, certainly. Musically, I just loved anything that was written, I used to say, by a songwriter on Tin Pan Alley between 1911 and 1943. And I would listen to Gershwin's old records and try to play the piano the way he did. And I think Irving Berlin is absolutely the genius of American music.
Well, that kind of leads into another question, Ed. I'm not sure I'm going to phrase it right. When I research a lot of my shows, especially in the lesbian artists, I run into the fact that a lot of the people I really respect, like Alex Dobkin, Robin Tyler, Maxine Feldman, are the most out artists, and their lyrics are the most out, and they're all Jewish.
Uh-huh.
And what is the connection between that?
I think that it's a, well, Robin, for whom I have enormous respect, she was really the beginning of us all, and also talk about generous and helpful to everybody that followed her. Robin was born in Winnipeg. Winnipeg was one of the great Canadian sites for Jewish immigration that was interested in culture, and that creative people whose values included family and learning and a love for culture, they flocked there the way that that the Russian and European Jewish immigrants flocked to Ellis Island, where my people came from. So I suppose that being have-nots at the beginning, we were raised with a great consciousness of right and wrong, and a sense of justice, and a sense of if what we were wasn't good enough for other people, it was always good enough for ourselves, for us.
More out and proud.
More out and proud. But being an outsider, you're either going to hate yourself or you're going to go for it. And that was the spirit that gave us our American culture, was people who were oppressed.
Tell us about that first recording, Ladies Don't Spit and Holler.
Do I have to?
Well, sure.
I call it the Lynn Lavner White Album because we couldn't afford a cover. But Ladies Don't Spit and Holler was a feminist musical that was put together on very limited budget in New York City by some women, college women, and they wanted it to be a musical, and they asked me to write the songs for it. So I did, and we played locally, and we did, you know, a lot of freebies and college campuses and so on. And I don't know where we got the money or whether someone produced it. I really don't remember, but we played off Broadway just for a couple of weekends. And at the end of one performance, a woman came up to the piano, and she said to me, those songs are really great. Are they available on LP? Can I buy them? And I said, well, no, actually, we've looked into making a recording, but it's prohibitively expensive. And without missing a beat, she said to me, well, I'll pay for it. And I thought, well, honey, go home, sober up, come see the show again next week. Maybe, you know, things will get better in your life. She called me the next day to ask why I was so reluctant to talk to her about this. And it was a very funny story. She was a true feminist who had inherited, of all horrible things, a hunting lodge from her uncle. And she couldn't get rid of that hunting lodge fast enough and put the money towards something that she saw politically enlightened. And so she paid for that album, and we made 300 copies of it, and it's amazing. But there are still people who will be in touch about it and who like this from it and that from it. I don't think you've been able to buy it for some time.
Roughly what year was Ladies Don't Spit and Holler?
1982, I believe.
Was it vinyl or tape or
it
what?
It was vinyl.
Really?
It was never made into tape.
I have a cassette tape of it.
A good friend of mine, Bruce Reeves in Houston, made a CD of it. And I think I made some homemade copies on tape. But I don't think it was ever sold as a tape.
Okay, yeah. The cassette I have looks very homemade.
Then it's one of the homemade ones. It's probably, I mean, how many women bootleg themselves? You know, I probably copied my own songs and gave them away.
Of what song that you've written are you the most proud and why?
It's hard to explain unless you're a songwriter. I don't think anybody ever wrote a song that they were pleased with when it was finished, or that lived up to their expectation of what it was going to be when they started.
Okay, well then, at your concerts, which of the songs seem to be the most popular?
I guess the one you mentioned, Lesbian Too Long, is a big favorite. And it's a funny thing. The song I Like Older Women has caught on not only among younger women, but among older women and among children. And, of course, I think the song that has moved people the most is Such Fine Young Men, which was, I believe, the first song ever recorded on the subject of AIDS by any woman, straight or gay, and was a response of mine at the time to some early criticism of the people with the virus. You know, if they hadn't been this, that, and the other terrible thing, well, they just wouldn't have caught this. And it just made me so angry that I wanted to personalize it. And so I sang about three friends who had died of it.
Yeah, that's a beautiful song.
And I think because that means so much to me, maybe it was conveyed to the audience, and I think it struck a chord as we all suffered so terribly, directly or indirectly, with the spread of the epidemic.
My friend George was an ordinary man with a sweet and rather sober way about him. Not much more than a dimple and an unaffected smile, and you trust him with your life and never doubt him. Such a fine young man, such a good young man, and the kind you'd pin your fondest hopes upon. Such a fine young man, like a flower in the spring. I pinch myself to realize he's gone. My friend Dean was a pisser from the start, with a heart as big as any you could pick. He could cut through any bullet with an impudent remark, and he'd cut the limes and lemons just as quick. Such a fine young man, such a good young man, and the kind you'd pin your fondest hopes upon. Such a fine young man, moved my piano, found my mic. I pinch myself to realize he's gone. My friend Rob liked to talk you half to death, made you feel that he was interested in you. Intelligent and generous, he'd scarcely stop for breath. Maybe 700 others felt it too. Such a fine young man, such a good young man, and the kind you'd pin your fondest hopes upon. Such a fine young man, found me work one Thursday night. I pinch myself to realize he's gone. So, you see, I've known some fellows in my day, and I've had to watch them go by ones and twos. And I won't defer to any other woman, straight or gay, who tries to teach me how to love and lose. Such fine young men, such good young men, so strong, so mild, so sure. I'm not a praying woman, yet I know that if I were, I'd pray that they would finally find a cure.
That was Such Fine Young Men from the 1986 album I'd Rather Be Cute. I want to ask about just a couple songs in particular. Please tell us about A Mother's Lament.
A Mother's Lament. It's a song that I think everybody relates to, because we all come from a family and we all come from a religious tradition, whether we've taken it seriously or not. And it's the song of a Jewish mother whose daughter is gay. And I introduce it at the piano by saying it's a song that my mother would have written for me if my mother could write songs and if there had been no Mahjong game that day. And it's basically, don't wear leather pants to the Seder. It's a mother saying, Lenny, tone it down a little bit, please, when you're with your Aunt Adele and your cousin Larry and so on.
With all the innocent love of a mother, I've been understanding that's true. I bought baseballs and spikes for your brother and a catcher's mitt for you. When other daughters were dating young doctors, you were spending your nights with a nurse. When other children ate lunch, I had to pack you a brunch. But please don't make the situation worse. Oh, Lenny, don't wear leather pants to the Seder. And don't put all that grease in your hair. Your Bubba and your Zeta are turning over you know where. Please cover your tattoo at the Seder. And don't tell Uncle Abe you think he's bent. Always be my baby, of that there is no doubt, but put another earring in or take the first one out. Please don't wear leather pants to the Seder. That's a Yiddish mama's lament. When I was young and the longing first stirred me, I prayed for a crib near my bed. But the deity must have misheard me. A little tyke was what I said. I never dressed you in satins or laces. You were always out kicking a goal. Be compassionate, I plead. Christy Brinkley, I don't need. But do you have to look like Billy Joel? Don't wear aftershave to the Seder, especially when I make your favorite dish. There'll be just what you love at the Seder. A little chicken and gefilte fish. Please don't ask for quiche at the Seder. Although it's not the worst thing, I confess. Today I got a phone call from your Aunt Adele. I promised not to mention it, so I guess that I can tell. Oh, you can wear whatever you want to the Seder. We'll cry later. Cousin Larry is wearing a dress.
The relatives that are mentioned in that song really all do exist. And Cousin Larry, too? Well, Cousin Larry never wore a dress to the Seder. His name is Larry Box, and I think he and I are the only two blood relatives ever to have both been Grand Marshals of Fort Lauderdale's Pride. Larry was one of the original Stonewallers in New York and has been honored many times as an early leader in the movement. And I'm very proud of him. And so whenever I'm in a city where he's nearby and he can come and see me perform, well, I do that song and I have him take the curtain calls.
Is there one message that you try to convey in your entertaining over the years? You know, what would that be?
It's so obvious that it hardly needs saying, and that is that we just need to be true to ourselves. Being in the closet is a sentence, a life sentence of being fearful and vulnerable and frightened and awkward and creating a barrier between ourselves and other people. And if you don't come out, you miss your life. It's not that we can live the first time to please the military, the parish priest, and our grandparents. You don't get a second chance. And what you try to do on stage is, first of all, to entertain. And in that sense, I am actually having somebody work on a website now. I'd love to expand my possibilities for bookings. But what's always exciting is going out and carrying a positive message and a couple of laughs to people who are not sure of themselves and not sure of the politics, or people who, especially young men, who have been deprived of the mentoring of older gay men because of the epidemic. You know, that's a terrible thing, not to have that continuity of a culture and know what was accomplished in the 80s and in the 70s and in the 60s, and talk to guys that were there, you know. But it's a terrible loss from a cultural point of view as well as personal. And
well, you definitely need a website. I did a search on you, and I found about 800 hits, mm-hmm. and almost, you know, probably 90% of them are your famous quotes.
Mm-hmm.
And so that brings up the question, what do you think is your most known quote?
It's definitely that there are six admonitions in the Bible concerning homosexuality, but our enemies don't want us to remember that there are 362 admonitions in the Bible concerning heterosexuality. It's not that God doesn't love straight people. It's just that they seem to require a great deal more supervision.
That's wonderful. A lot of people love that quote. It's a lot of sites.
There's a lot of truth to it.
Is there any song or part of your career that you want to talk about that I didn't touch on?
What I'd like to talk about is what you're doing, JD, and how important it is for the radio, for the archives, for the history of our people, that you seek us out and search us out and ask us about this stuff. You know, many of us are gone. Many of us look ahead and don't look back for one reason or another. And so the fact that you keep this alive, I think, it's a wonderful thing and a great service that you are providing to the community, and I wanted to thank you for that.
Well, thank you. It's, of course, a passion. It's a labor of love.
Yes. Good that we do it, that we're still out there doing it.
I had one more song I didn't want to miss, First Dicon Dynasty.
There was a time, I guess, when Dynasty was in its heyday, and there would be a night at the gay bar when you came in and you watched Dynasty, very much the way that those other people will go and watch the Super Bowl in a bar, I suppose. And so I just thought, well, this is too incredible. I would like to be the first dyke on Dynasty and get that whole gay sensibility into it. So I got a kick out of the idea.
I want to be the first dyke on Dynasty. I want a lavender Mercedes Benz. Why, I'll be the envy of all my faggot friends. I want to sit on the board of directors of a conglomerate. Give me the options and the common stocks, and I'll have a Joan Collins on the rocks. Why grieve and sigh? Life's short, and so am I. But now I'll show what I can do, and I'll cut crystal too. Someday I'll seek an interracial rendezvous with Dominique. And just before she kicks, I'll be the last of Barbara Stanwyck's tricks. First dyke on Dinah. Nothing could be finer than to name a fragrance for me. First dyke on Dinah. I'll bump all my kin off and I'll star in my own spinoff. First dyke on Dynasty.
Okay, I've got one more song for you to hear, but before I play it, I want to thank you all for tuning into the show, and I want to thank Lynn Labner for that very special interview. What a treat it was for me to be able to talk to her. There was more of the interview I just couldn't fit into the show, but you can hear it all at my website, logically enough found at www.queermusicheritage.com. If you have questions or comments about any of the music I featured, please write to me at qmheritage@aol.com. This is J.D. Doyle for Queer Voices on KPFT in Houston, and I'll be back on the fourth Monday of next month with another installment of Queer Music Heritage. And that edition will include a special interview with those Dragapella divas, the Kinsey Six. I started the show with a brand new song, and I want to end it with another. But actually, they are both old songs. Mark Weigel's song Jimmy at the start of the show is from an upcoming album that will be all cover versions. And the closing song is also from an album of cover versions. Andy Bell and Vince Clark of Eraser have just released their 10th studio album since forming in 1985, and it's called Other People's Songs. It's an excellent album, but without a doubt, my favorite track from it is their version of a song by none other than my favorite group from the 60s, the Ronettes. So, closing this show, here is Eraser with Walking in the Rain.
Certain he's not got by the things he's